You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas loses again, 23-22 to LSU. We'll recap it on the show today. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
I don't know how many times Arkansas can go through what they go through on the weekend. It's every game. It is every game. It is Lucy pulling the football back and Charlie falling straight on his back. It's amazing how this season has gone. And I heard something this morning. I think that I've got this stat right, that Arkansas is the 12th team in FBS history who has lost seven games by single digits in the same season. I'd be curious if there's ever been nine. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I think the Texas game could be close this weekend. I think the Missouri game could be close. I could see it going the other way, too. And, you know, for Petrino, I don't think Petrino's got a chance to get the Arkansas job at this point. But if you are Bobby or you're his agent and you're shopping him around for a head coaching job at the end of this season, whether that be like a group of six type job or whatever, because I think he could probably land one of those if that's what he wants. I don't know that that's what he wants. You know, he said he wanted to be considered for the head coaching job at Arkansas. I don't know if that is he wants to be considered for the head coaching job because he likes Arkansas or because he wants to be a head coach again. Only he can answer that. I don't know that answer. But let's say you're his agent or you're Petrino and you're shopping him around for vacancies whenever the season ends. I would have to believe that the fact that they have continued to be competitive in every single game has got to be a big selling point to an AD. Like, you know, let's say he goes to a I'm just going to throw a school out hypothetically. I'm going to say Charlotte because I don't think they're going to be open, and that's a job that he was in contention for, I think, a year ago. So let's say you go to Charlotte's AD and you say, hey, look at what they did. They were horrible in terms of they got blown off their home field by Notre Dame by 43 points, and they came back and they lost by three to Tennessee, a good team. They lost by three to A&M, maybe a national championship team this year. They lost by nine to Auburn. Not a great loss, but, you know, and everybody knows how these games have gone. They were competitive. They didn't let go of the rope. That, to me, I was thinking about this on the way over here, Christina. I probably, and this is weird because so many people are just result-based, result-oriented. I think I've actually enjoyed watching the team more in the last month than at a lot of other times in the last few years, just because I think you can see more fight out of them in the last month than maybe you could see at other points in the last few years. They're not nearly as good as these teams they're playing. And so the fact that they're playing A&M close and they're playing LSU close, I know people don't like close losses and they don't like moral victories, and that's not what this is. It's just I enjoy seeing the fight out of this team, even if the results at the end, the losses, have been pretty hard to stomach.
Yeah, I think I tend to be more results-oriented. But at the same time, it's just been hard for me to reconcile in my own mind the way that we talked about the close losses under Pittman and how, oh my God, they can't get over the hump, they can't get a win. And then when Petrino loses a close game, it's, well, look how close, you know, it's so great that they were able to keep it close. And when it was Pittman, and I know there's different circumstances to that, I know it's not necessarily one-to-one, but I do have trouble kind of saying that, you know, it makes me think of that meme, the hello human resources meme. Do you know what I'm talking about? Some people will know. It makes me think of that, though, where it's like, you know, when somebody you're already tired of does it, it's just adds fuel to the fire of why this person shouldn't be coaching here anymore. And I'm not saying that they should have kept Sam Pittman, but I'm saying, you know, it's hard for me to look at that when it's the same team and then see Petrino do it and go, well, it's great for him that they've been able to keep it competitive. I do think, and I've said this, I think I was talking about this last week, I do think he deserves credit for the fact that they haven't let go of the rope after the coach was fired and while the season is lost. And I continue to be surprised that they haven't quit on it yet. So, I mean, it's hard. I go both ways on it where, you know, I do think he deserves some credit for that because of how hard it is as an interim coach, especially when the losses are piling up, to keep them coming back and keep them playing for something.
They are so much worse than these teams they're playing.
I mean, Auburn and Mississippi State? No.
Yes, I think they are. I think they are. I think if, like, I would be interested to go back and look in 3-4 years and say, look at the amount of, maybe not with Mississippi State, but with Auburn, go back and look at the amount of NFL players that come off that roster and come off this Arkansas roster. I don't think it's close.
I don't think with Auburn and Mississippi State it's all that different.
With Mississippi State, I'm with you. I think Auburn.
Auburn has better defensive talent, probably.
They
more
got
widespread.
Way better.
More
they
widespread.
They got guys all over that defense.
Yeah.
That can play.
Yeah.
I just, you know, and again, this isn't supposed to be moral victories or anything like that, and that's not what I'm trying to make it. I'm just saying, I am continually impressed with the fact that they have not just totally given up.
Yeah,
I really am.
It's worth something. It's worth something. But
because I was thinking about this, and Arkansas had plenty of experience being a 2-and-whatever team. 2019, last time it happened, 2-4 after they lose to Kentucky. These are their next 4 games before their coach gets fired. Auburn, they lose by 41. Alabama, they lose by 41. Mississippi State, they lose by 30. Western Kentucky, they lose by 26. 3 of those games were on their home field. That's what quitting looks like when the season's not going the way that you wanted it to. And I it's not just Petrino. It's Chris Wilson. It's all of the different coaches who have had a hand in this. And it's the players. I say to them, you know, good on you for not quitting on this season like you see can happen a lot of times for teams when the season hasn't gone their way. Florida State last year would be an example of the season doesn't go their way and the season just totally tanks. And, you know, what Florida State was expected to do last year and the talent they had, that's a different story than, you know, what Arkansas was expected to do or the talent that Arkansas had this year. But I do think that there is something, I don't know if commendable is the word, but there is something to be said for continuing to go out there every week and giving yourself a chance to win. They just can't win. And I don't know what it is. I've got some theories. I think that the defense, you look at the defense in the fourth quarter, it seems to just totally wear out. And I suspect that has something to do with a lack of defensive depth. You know, you're just asking guys to play so many snaps throughout the course of a game, and they just give out at the end. Against LSU the other day, LSU scraped the bottom of the bag of tricks to beat Arkansas. And I think that's as high of a compliment as you can give to a defense. It's like Lou Holtz always said that if they're running trick plays against you, it means they think they can't beat you straight up. And I think that's how it went for LSU the other day. I mean, they unloaded the clip at the end of that game. And it almost felt like the dad at a seven-year-old flag football game who's out there literally drawing plays up in the dirt and saying, okay, let's do this, and you fake it to him, and you throw it to him, and then you – that's what it looked like at the end of that game. And, you know, it's hard to defend against that, to be honest with you. Now, clearly they weren't just drawing it up. This was stuff that they had practiced and that they were prepared and ready to run against Arkansas. But I think the most frustrating defensive drive for Arkansas had to be that last drive where they've got all three of their timeouts. They've got the 2-minute timeout, 5 minutes and 8 seconds, and they still can't get LSU off the field. It's not the first time we've seen that this year with this team where they couldn't get a team off the field and give their offense one more chance. I guess maybe this is grading the team on the curve.
Yeah.
I just see the team for what it is. It's not a very talented team. And so the fact that they're playing these teams like an A&M, a championship contender, like a Tennessee who thinks that, they should be in the playoff, even though they're not going to be in the playoff this year. They think, at least coming into the year, they thought they had a playoff, caliber roster. I don't know. Maybe I would look at this different if I had higher expectations for the Razorback football team this year. But the expectations that I had just were not very high. And whatever expectations I had, they really sank a lot after the coaching change, because I have seen several times what happens after you make that head coaching change where the season just goes, you know, straight into the toilet.
Which I thought would be more what happened. But at the same time, like you said, if you're more results oriented, you would say, well, they haven't won any games, so how does it really help them?
And I said, I'm not.
Yeah, that's what I know. But I think, you know, a lot of people
are. We had this discussion beforehand that, like, the way I see things and the way the rest of the world see things are often that.
Yeah.
Conflict with each other.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's, like I said, I'm of two minds about it, where I do think they deserve credit for not completely, for keeping the players from, you know, quitting on the season because of how easy it would be to do that at this point. Or honestly, a couple weeks ago, you know, as these losses have piled up, when, you know, and you've got a fired coach and it's become apparent that your next coach is probably not going to be Bobby Petrino, and a lot of you are probably going to be on different teams next year. And so, you know, that's definitely worth something, but it's also, you know, you're not winning any games.
How many people would you say are in that building?
How many people?
Yeah. Coaches, support staff,
I don't
players.
Even guess. I mean, there's a lot of people in there.
Well over 200.
Yeah.
Well over 200. I would say at least 125 to 150 of them will be gone.
Yeah.
In 6 months.
Yeah.
Be it coaches who are fired, players who enter the portal, players who enter the portal on their own volition or are told you're not good enough to be here for the new coaching staff. And so, yeah, I remember the 2012 season. When after Petrino had gotten fired in the spring, and then it became so evident there the last, I don't know, I'd say month to a month and a half of the season, where the coaches, they, I'm not going to say all of them, but a lot of them were checked out.
Mm.
They were worried about, hey, you know, and this is a real, you know, I don't know if fear is the right word, but it's a real consideration. You know, it's like, hey, where is my family going to be in 2 months? You know,
where's
the paycheck going to be coming from? So, you know, again, to put out all of those distractions, and we've seen teams here at Arkansas in the past where even 2 years ago, I mean, they sucked in November. They were terrible. They lost to Liberty. Yeah. They got run off their home field by Auburn. They got run off their home field by, or I guess Liberty was in 22. But in 23, they got run off the home field by Auburn and Missouri in the two of the last 3 weeks of the season. And, you know, I think that at that point, they knew they weren't going to a bowl game. And I think there were a lot of players who were like, hey, you know, they got people in their ear. Hey, you know, you can get this if you go here, and you know, this school they want, like that kind of stuff happens. And so, that's what I'm saying is to be able to block out all of those distractions, and especially here in November, and after a bye week when you know you got a little bit of downtime for people to get in your ear, and you got a little bit of downtime to be looking around and checking houses in whatever place, to be able to come out and continue to give that type of effort. Maybe some people say that's a moral victory. That's fine. I look at it and I say, I think that is, you know, it's just commendable to be able to do that over and over and over. And especially when you've had the same result over and over and over.
You're
it would be
a lot
so
the same
easy.
Ways.
It would be so easy at that point to just say, look, I'm done with this. I don't want to go through this again.
That's how I feel
I don't
covering
give,
this team.
I don't want to give the effort that it takes to have my heart ripped out in the fourth quarter. And so that's where I'm at with this team. I think that, again, maybe it's just a result of low expectations for him. I think that there is something, I don't know what the word is. I said commendable earlier to continue to do that week after week.
I had a moment yesterday where I was like, man, we got to do this two more times. And I am obviously not doing anything remotely close to the effort that they have to put in to actually play the football games. And so, yeah, it is surprising to me that they've been able to keep it together. But yeah, I'm getting to that point where I'm like, you know, these Monday press conferences with Petrino just came from over there. It's like, what do we ask about? What are we looking at?
Oh, we're all tired of it. We're all tired of the season. I mean, I think if we all had our druthers, you know, you just say, hey, cancel the last two games. You know, make this like a baseball type format where, hey, it's best of seven and you know, you've already won your four. Let's just call it quits now.
Yeah.
But you got to play it all.
Yeah.
You get through the end. Man, what do you say about this game? You know,
the same thing you say about a lot of the other games?
Yeah, I mean, it played out, I think, like I thought it would.
Yeah.
Where you have Arkansas struggling offensively, and maybe their defense playing a little bit better than you would think they would based on the statistics going into the game. I thought defensively it was their best game of the season. Now, statistically, it would say it's their second best game of the year in terms of efficiency. They had a slightly better game this year against Memphis, but you know, they got LSU off the field a lot, and it wasn't just that they were getting them off the field, Christina. I think there were three or four drives in that game where they got LSU off the field with LSU not getting a first down. That's how the first touchdown was set up, and that's how the second touchdown was set up too. The first one set up after Arkansas has a turnover down deep in LSU territory. They block a punt. They take it back. They're up 7-0. Then there's another 3-and-out. They get good field position. They go down and they score, and it's 14-0. And you're thinking, hey, you know, there might be 50,000, 60,000 people in the stadium. It's a sleepy morning in Baton Rouge. Maybe you got a chance to pull this thing out. And then, you know, I think what you saw was that LSU's defense is really good. Like that defense has been good all season. They were able to contain Taylen Green some. He did get loose on some runs. That 55-yard run was certainly a big run at the moment in the game and helped pad his statistics. But I thought they probably played him as well as they played any mobile quarterback in the last, 4 or 5 weeks of the season. We talked last week about Pavia and what he had done against him and Marcel Reed and what he had done against him. You know, they just Arkansas made some mistakes, and I thought that was kind of interesting before the game. Chris Doering was talking about Taylen Green. He said he's going to throw an interception. He always throws interceptions. And there were two critical interceptions in that game, one being in the end zone that was really you wonder how – there's a couple, three moments in the games where you wonder, like, what if this happens instead of that happens? What if he doesn't throw an interception in the end zone from the 9-yard line? And what if they don't let LSU's running backs break off a couple of 14-yard runs? It looked like LSU was just trying to run out the clock there at the end of the first half. They were going to be content being down 14-13. And then it's all of a sudden, hey, we're 28 yards down the field here. In a matter of 15, 20 seconds, they're able to go down and get a field goal. That was a big what-if moment in the game. You know, I mean, even if Arkansas gets a field goal instead of LSU getting a field goal there, that's a six-point swing in Arkansas's favor. You think about, what if at the goal line, what if Arkansas just takes its field goal and goes up 17-16 in the third quarter instead of trying to be stubborn and punching in a touchdown and trying to take the lead right there? You know, one thing we've seen from Petrino since the changeover is that he is ultra aggressive, yeah. Like almost to a fault. I was actually a little surprised. I looked up the stat this morning on fourth down since Petrino became the interim head coach in 5 games. They're 7-for-12 on fourth down during that time. I actually thought that the conversion percentage would be a little bit lower than it has been. Maybe it's just a matter of they've failed in a lot of really critical moments that have helped turn around some of those games. But boy, they've been aggressive. And, you know, maybe he doesn't like Scott Starzik. Yeah, and I shouldn't say it like that. Maybe he doesn't trust Starzik. And certainly, it looked like he was frustrated by being talked into kicking the field goal with a little over 5 minutes left whenever Starzik missed it and they never had a chance to score again. Yeah, but those are a couple of big what-if moments in the game where you come away with no points, and in one instance it turns into points for LSU. And there's always one or two of those in a game, especially in close games, where you can go back and you can magnify those moments and you say, hey, that's the difference between you losing a one-point game by a point or winning it by 6 points. And it feels like we can do that in a lot of their losses this year.
Yeah, I mean, the turnover stuff keeps coming up. It was something that I was thinking about a lot, and, you know, something you and I have talked about often with just, like, some of the stuff with Taylen Green that just hasn't gotten that much better.
Yep.
Some of the decision stuff. I mean, the not seeing tell me what you think about this. The time when Jaden Platt was wide open in front of Omega Blake, like literally just in front of him. If you saw one, you saw the other. Throws to the triple covered Omega Blake. It gets picked off. I was almost wondering, because of how bad he missed some guys later, I was like, do you think he was trying to throw to Jaden Platt and just missed him? And threw it to Omega Blake.
Wasn't there one? There was kind of a funny moment during the game where I think it was Matt Stinchcomb, who was the color analyst, said, that's not intentional grounding. He just missed the pass that bad.
Because the official had to come on and say that. Yeah, it was insane. So
I think Green has a tendency to just lock down on receivers.
Yeah,
and
which we saw all last year. That was a huge problem last year.
Pre-snap, say, this is where I'm going.
Yep.
Because in that instance where he throws it to Blake, he's in triple coverage.
Yep.
Why do you throw that pass?
Yeah. And Petrino said, he was like, I don't know why he did that. Yeah. I don't know why you do that. He talked about it a little bit today. And it's just – so stuff like that that's just kind of baffling. And, like, you know, you're going to have mistakes. No quarterback is going to be totally perfect, especially at the college level. But it's the same stuff that we've been seeing from him since he got here. It's just the same sort of story. I think there's probably areas that he has improved. And somebody asked Bobby about that today, about, you know, like, the interception numbers haven't gotten any better. But, you know, do you feel like he has? And he said yes. But I think it's just difficult to continue to watch him lead an offense that, like we always talk about, puts up a lot of yards in a lot of games, but what do yards mean when you can't turn it into points? Which was, again, the case. You know, it wasn't a crazy yardage game for them this week, but they got so close so many times and couldn't punch it in, couldn't
What was it? They
points.
Got three times inside the 25-yard line and came away without points?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
An interception? So. Yeah. A fumble, an interception?
One and two at the two, or what was it?
Well, I mean, they got to the one on the goal line
and
then to the nine
Then
to the 24. Yeah. So anyway, three times they get inside the 25-yard line and they come away without points on all three.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it can't happen.
You can't be doing that. You know, with Green, the athleticism is so good with him, but the decision-making it kind of offsets some of that.
Yeah.
And I was looking at this during the 8-game losing streak, 15 touchdowns, 10 turnovers for him. 8 of those interceptions, 2 of them are fumbles. Both of those fumbles are against Tennessee. The 15 touchdowns, I think it was 9 passes and 6 touchdown runs, which he had a touchdown run the other day against LSU. So in 8 games, that's less than 2 touchdowns per game and more than 1 turnover per game from your quarterback. Those are losing numbers.
Yeah, you can't have it. And it's not new, which is one of the main concerns, I think.
Now, I want to go back to the defense because I think, you know, again, what did Petrino tell him? Before this whole changeover, he said you're putting stuff on film
for your resume. Next... He talked about it again today. Yeah,
maybe he's talking to himself here. but Chris Wilson, the defensive coordinator, I have to think that he's going to have to get a look somewhere as a defensive coordinator again. Maybe not a Power Four job, but you know somewhere. You know, it's going to give him a look because he's taking the same defense that played horribly in the first few weeks of the season. And again, I don't count Alabama, A&M, and Arkansas State. I know it counts toward the record. I don't count those games in terms of looking at what they did. Look at Taylen Green. He had 10 touchdown passes and 1 interception in those 2 games, and look what it's looked like since. I think you can look at that on the other side, too. Everybody was saying that, you know, man, y'all are crazy for ragging this defense. They've only given up 1 touchdown in both of the first 2 games. Well, you kind of see what was coming, though. But he's taken that defense, and he's made them competitive enough. And I think what's interesting here is Mississippi State is not this way, but 2 of their last 3 games, what was that we said early in the season, they're wasting this really great offense with a defense that can't stop anybody. Like, even if you could get 2 stops a game, maybe you win. Well, now it's like the roles have reversed, and you're getting – defensive efforts that should win you games, and you're getting an offensive effort that is not good enough to take advantage of what the defense is doing. So, you know, they were able to change coaches middle of the season defensively. They weren't able to change players. And I think the fact, you know, that they've been able to squeeze that lemon and get as, you know, all the juice out of it that they possibly can defensively. I think that's a credit to Chris Wilson and these guys. And, you know, people may be listening to this and saying, God, look at all these moral victories. I don't think it's that. I just think it's, when you watch the games as much as we do and you watch them as closely as we do, you're maybe just looking at different stuff than the casual fan will do for whatever 3 hours they watch it, or maybe they turn it off after an hour and a half. I don't know.
Do you think it's any sort of indictment of Petrino, the fact that that has turned and that the offense is now costing them games? Because one thing that I hear,
well, they're playing
a lot,
better defenses down the stretch. Auburn and LSU are 2 of the best defenses that they play.
They're also playing worse offenses. So that's one of those things where I feel like one thing I hear or see people talk about when they're sort of Petrino defenders is, you know, well, who, you know, he's not, it's not his fault that the players are bad. And I'm like, well, the offense
for half the team, it is.
But the offense, if talent wise, I would say is a little better than the defense.
I mean, they got a good offensive line.
Yeah.
Mike Washington was clearly a good find in the portal at running back.
Rohan Jones has been awesome.
If they'll throw Jayden it to Platt him. They didn't awesome throw it to too. Rohan no, Jones one time on weird. Saturday. It was
but
crazy.
But Jayden Platt has also been good. But
I mean, Omega Blake has been okay as a receiver. So, I mean, they've got some pieces on offense. They just clearly don't have enough pieces. And then, maybe your biggest job as an OC and a quarterback coach is to get a quarterback who's going to run an effective offense. And, again, with Green, they can get a lot of yards with him. But it just seems like whenever it comes critical time, and sometimes that's critical time in the game, sometimes that's a critical spot on the field, he just doesn't make the play that you need your quarterback to be making. And so that's always the tough thing to grade him, I guess, so to speak, is that gets a lot of yards. And, you know, if you look at total offense, what's he like, number one or number two in the country?
Something like that.
You know, but would you say he's one of the top two quarterbacks in the country? No, obviously he wouldn't. The Davey O'Brien put out their list the other day of semifinalists for quarterback of the year. They put 20 quarterbacks on this list, and he's not one of them.
Yeah.
If you need anything that screams how goofy it is to look at total offense, I mean, there's Exhibit A of we go on for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I kind of say I don't necessarily know that it's just fully an indictment of Petrino, but it's one of the reasons that I'm not necessarily willing to say, you know, I don't know. I think
half
some people,
the team is his,
and it's so odd that the offense hasn't totally regressed or completely flipped, but the offense has sort of taken a step back while the defense has taken a step forward, and the offense is what he is.
But I think we knew that was going to happen. We talked about this before the season, and we said, you know, you look at the schedule, and the last five games of the season were against teams that could really play defense. Texas can play defense, and that's who Arkansas is playing this week. Missouri, their defensive numbers have slipped some, but they're still a pretty decent defensive unit. Mississippi State's not. But, you know, we said, like if you just kind of want to break it down and speak generally about the schedule, the front half is full of teams that mm-hmm. can't play defense as well. Tennessee's the second worst defense in the SEC outside of Arkansas. A&M, even though they've had some really good defensive games, they've had some crazy bad defensive games too. They're real erratic, A&M is. But, you know, you just talk about consistently, LSU's been really good defensively. Auburn's been really good defensively. Texas has been really good defensively. And so I think we expected to see a little bit of a slip from offense down the stretch here. It's just, I think maybe it's a little bit more drastic than we thought it would be. You look at Arkansas the other day, they've got 10 possessions. They score 15 points. You know, one of their touchdowns was on a blocked punt. But 10 possessions, 15 points, that's not going to win you very many games. And even if the defense is better, if your offense is as elite as people thought this one could potentially be, you've got to be able to convert and score at a higher rate than that. Some of that's going to be, you know, settling for fourth down tries when you could have gotten a field goal. You take your points in a couple of situations, and who knows how this game is different. Maybe we're talking about them differently today. But you know, just taking the whole offensive picture into account, you would think that they would be better even if LSU's defense is as good as we thought it was.
Yeah, it's just been interesting to track the changes across this team. And, like, yeah, the schedule did flip in a weird way. It was a strangely sort of chunky schedule that it turned the page from, you know, the good offenses to the good defenses and the, mm-hmm. or vice versa or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to expect out of these next 2 weeks. I think, again, they keep having games that are in theory winnable, and I keep having no evidence to say that I think they'll actually win them.
I have had a good feeling the last several weeks that they were going to be competitive in their games. I don't have a good feeling about that this week. I think they could be walking into a real buzzsaw at Texas this weekend.
Yeah.
This could be the week, and that's why you got to get the flowers and the attaboys out of the way today
mm-hmm.
about, hey, good job, guys, not, you know, letting go of the rope, because I think it's got the potential to be ugly in Austin. It's got the potential to be another, I mean, like, statistically it sets up as potentially like an Auburn LSU type game again, where you've got a Texas offense that you don't know what you're going to get from them from game to game, and you got a Texas defense that's been really good. It just feels, I don't know, I've got a different feeling going into this one than I've had going into any of these other games, because I thought they had a chance to beat LSU. I came really close to picking Arkansas to beat LSU last week. I just got to a point whenever it came time to hit submit, I just don't trust them to win down the stretch.
That's how I feel. Every time, you know, the last couple games we picked them in, I just don't have reason to believe that this will be the time that they get it done.
Mm. All right.
I just don't.
We'll have more football talk coming up. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Arkansas basketball won Friday night. They beat Samford 79-75. I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't see a lick of it. I had a playoff football game Friday night. I haven't even gone back and watched the highlights because it looked like it was just a really ugly game. I know you were there. What did you think?
I was. It was a rare. I go to a lot of the games, but I don't. I'm not usually on press row, and so I made my return. Yeah, I mean it was strange. It was one of those where Samford just would not go away. Arkansas kept letting them back in the game. There was kind of a strange sort of lack of physicality, it felt like, especially from guys like Trevin Brazil. Some of those bigs just were not playing all that well. And Trevin Brazil is a guy that they really need a lot from, especially because of how some of the other bigs have turned out, at least here in the early going, and they need him to be on. And there were just times where it was just sort of low effort. I don't know if he was just gassed or what, but so that was kind of strange. And yeah, just a lack of physicality that was odd to see, but they were able to, you know, fend them off. But it just felt like even when they got out to a 15-point lead, Samford was able to make us a lot of threes. We knew kind of coming in that they were a good three-point shooting team, and they just kept being able to get back in it, and Arkansas just kept letting it happen. It was very strange, even when I thought they had finally put it away, and then they hadn't.
It reminded me, just kind of listening and reading what happened, you know, Lenny Acuff is the head coach at Samford. He had been the head coach at Lipscomb. Remember Lipscomb played Arkansas down at North Little Rock? Was this 2-3 years ago? Mm-hmm. It was when Musselman was the coach. And Arkansas was up by like 17 or 18 or something. And then Lipscomb just made this mad dash at the end to the point that I think they had the ball. They had possession with a chance to tie the game and missed the shot. But like it was just this crazy crash out at the end. And it kind of feels like that's what happened with this game yesterday. I mean, I guess maybe you give his team's credit for never giving in, even when it looks like the outcome is academic.
Yeah, Anthony kept calling it the Lenny Acuff experience. He was like, you guys are finally seeing the full Lenny Acuff experience. It's also funny, I meant to text you about this. Everybody kept talking about Lenny Acuff, and he seems like one of those guys that you always use first name, last name with him. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever calls him Lenny or just Acuff. But people's accents here, they all say Lenny Acuff. And so I kept thinking about you and your daughter, Lenny, because yeah. I kept hearing people say Lenny. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, it was definitely just one of those where they just kept fighting back. I gave, you know, give Samford a lot of credit for it. So yeah, it was odd. It was a little bit more than maybe they bargained for. And I think, you know, it feels like we keep writing a similar story in some of these non-conference games about they keep having a lot to learn from. They keep seeing things they need to do better, which is what this non-conference slate is for. But it seems like there just keep being things that, you know, are teachable moments, I think, from a lot of these games.
So they play again tomorrow night. They play Winthrop at Bud Walton Arena. Winthrop won its homecoming game the other day. I have never seen a college basketball team have a homecoming game.
I was going to say, is that a thing? That's crazy.
It's apparently
also
a thing with
early.
Winthrop.
I guess maybe did they have football? Does Winthrop play football?
Well, you're asking me,
if
you're
Winthrop
asking me lots
plays
of questions
football,
that
I'm like,
uncomfortable
maybe
right now.
I'm like, maybe they had football.
Mercer, that was their homecoming game. Huh. They're in Rock Hill, South Carolina, Winthrop is. Did you know that?
No.
That's basically Charlotte, right? I think Rock Hill was more...
like coastal or maybe closer to Columbia?
Okay.
I feel crazy.
You're going to look this
Having
up.
Lived in South Carolina, I should maybe
I
know.
I thought Rock Hill was a suburb of Charlotte.
Oh, no, it is. It's close to Charlotte.
Okay,
you're right.
Yeah. I think I have driven through Rock Hill before, flew into Charlotte, gone down to Columbia to cover a game. I thought I'd gone through Rock Hill, but that was a long time ago. So they beat Mercer the other night, 105-69. They've got a 2-2 record coming in here. We'll talk a little bit more about that game tomorrow, before Arkansas plays Winthrop at 7 o'clock at Bud Walton Arena. Arkansas soccer, they advanced in the NCAA tournament. They beat Dartmouth on Friday night. By the way, and you experienced this too. I mean, if you were in that little area Friday night, you had a playoff game going on at Fayetteville High School. You had the soccer game going on at Razorback Field. And then you had the basketball game going on at Bud Walton Arena. It was pretty tight.
I totally didn't even think about it. I knew all of that was going on, and it didn't even cross my mind when I was planning when I was going
to
leave.
I think it'd like freak you out a little bit if it did.
I would have left way earlier than I need to. And honestly, I didn't even have traffic issues when I was going. I come from the north, so it's a little bit different. But
soccer ended, but the playoff football game and the basketball game ended around the same time. Right. And so like I'm sitting up there in the press box at the high school, and I could see out, and it's like, that's a lot of red. I'm just going to take my time.
We've had a couple weekends like that up here.
So the Razorback soccer team. Moving on, they're going to play Thursday. They're going to Charlottesville, Virginia. This is in a little quadrant hosted by the University of Virginia. Arkansas is going to play Washington on Thursday. That's going to be a 2 o'clock start time on Thursday. The winner of that game, Washington is the 4 seed in the bracket. Arkansas is the 5. I know there's been some talk about should Arkansas have been higher than a 5 seed in their bracket. But the winner will play either Virginia, who's the number 1 seed in their bracket, or Penn State. Both of those games will be this weekend. So there will be a game Thursday, and then the winner Thursday will turn around and play Saturday for a chance to go to the Elite Eight. Women's basketball lost to Texas Tech yesterday. Maybe a little bit closer score than I thought it might be. Again, you think about where the team is, you know, relative to their opponent. I thought coming out of Lubbock with, you know, as tight of a score as that was – let's just say it was a little bit surprising to me. Based on what happened against Southeastern Louisiana, which from all indications, Kelsey Musick absolutely let her team have it after they only beat Southeastern Louisiana by 8 points. That's just little birdie has told me as much.
Yeah, it seemed like that one was ugly. But with Texas Tech, reading through.
I think it took her like 45 minutes to get into the postgame press conference.
Oh, was it really that long?
I think that's crazy. Was something crazy.
That's wild.
And I think she missed her radio interview.
Oh, wow. And Cal did too.
Yeah. Well, but he misses a lot of his radio
interviews. He does. It was really funny.
He delegates a lot after the game. He will send an assistant coach out to
do
radio.
I don't know that he does it on purpose, because he was leaving the podium the other day after talking to us, and he looked up. Riley Hall, the director of ops, is walking in. He looks up at Riley and goes, "I didn't do that radio. Is that okay?" And Riley did not respond. And so I don't think he chooses and says, "Hey, Chin Coleman, go." I think he just doesn't show up and they go, "He's not coming. Chin,
go." It's really weird, by the way, just kind of like a sneak behind the curtain here. And people stay after the game to listen to these radio interviews.
Well, they advertise it throughout the game. They say, stay after and listen to Coach Cal. And then you get Coleman. No offense to Chin Coleman, but
they've moved the radio crews off the floor and they've moved them up into the stands. Considerably up into the stands. I'd say they're probably 10 to 15 rows up into the stands now. That's where Chuck Barrett and whoever's doing the visiting radio, that's where they're calling the game from. And I knew that was happening. But the first time that I went to a game last week, the dynamic of seeing the post-game interview, you know, where usually they will come and they'll sit, or in the old days, they would come and they would sit down with the radio crew and they would do that post-game interview. Now it's Chuck and Matt Zimmerman are staying upstairs in their perch, and they're doing an interview with someone who's down on the floor who's got a headset on.
Are they, like, looking at each other?
Calipari's not looking at him because Calipari's signing basketballs the whole time. And, you know, I mean, it's a very scattered experience, his post-game interview on the radio, because he'll be talking, this is for the little girl, and throw a basketball. Yeah. And then it's quite the experience after the games. But that's just a weird dynamic that's happening now. And what they did was that on the scorers table, they basically took away, you know, I don't know, 2 to 4 seats on each side of the scorers table so that they could put these cushioned seats. I think they sold those seats for $175,000 per seat per year. So, like, it's a big-time monetary deal that they moved the radio crews where they did. Arkansas is not the only place that does this. I think Michigan State had the radio spots up above the floor, too. So that's at the NBA-ification of college basketball is real, and I hate it. I hate the atmosphere. I went to the game last week. It was a dreadful experience. And that's coming from me, who's used to college basketball game day experience looking one way versus, you know, maybe somebody who's a lot younger and they see it a different way. And that's fine. If that's the way you want to go in college basketball, then that's fine. But I'm going to tell you, the people who grew up with it, you know, feeling a certain way from an atmosphere standpoint, it kind of sucks right now. The Bud Walton experience is not what the Bud Walton experience used to be.
I don't really enjoy it either.
It'll still be great for the big games. you know, it'll still be good for the big games, you know, when you've got everybody in there. But, man, when there's 6,000, 7,000, 9,000 people in there for some of these early season games, and, you know, you've got the, you know, the I'm going to say the boom box, but it's not the boom box. You know, you got whatever it is turned up to 11.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just and there's no time to breathe either. That's a change this year that the NCAA has made, where you can play stuff in like dead ball now, as opposed to, you know, used to it had to be like during a timeout or a review or something like that, a stoppage of play. Now you can and it's like there's no time for the atmosphere to breathe at all. It's, oh God, we got a, they're having to mop up the floor. Let's, you know, play this.
I don't particularly enjoy it either. It's just real. It's real loud.
It's loud.
It's like painful.
I'm going to sound like the old man here. I had to have my AirPods in.
Oh, I put them in with noise cancellation on. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I was like, I'm genuinely worried about I worry about this all the time, just with being in stadiums and arenas all the time. I'm like, I'm going to lose my hearing at 55. Yeah. Like, I'm scared.
I don't like the Bud Walton experience right now. Again, maybe I feel different when they have Louisville come in next month. And
I always wonder what Calipari thinks, having come from Kentucky.
See, I think he likes the NBA deal.
I mean, just in terms of it not being well attended and it not being loud at all. Oh, you know,
it drives him crazy.
It not being
loud. It drove him crazy last year. I mean,
loud in terms
of
music, not in terms of fans at all.
Yes, yes. It drove him crazy last year.
Yeah. He talked a little bit about it last year, I think, publicly.
He talked about it a lot. I mean, like, even on, like, his Monday night radio show, he was talking about it a ton.
And nobody and they've
tried. Well, they've tried to get people to give their tickets back. But from what I was told, a lot of times what happens is that people 2 hours from tip-off will say, hey, here's my tickets. Well, at that point, you can't give your tickets away to anybody. Yeah. You know, it's you're relying very much on the local crowd to show up to it.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, Northwest Arkansas is so big. Why aren't people coming? Well, I mean, it's...
Well, when you let one person buy 14 seats...
Yeah, it's tough.
This, I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast. We went to a game. I can't remember which
you
game
went to
it was.
The first. It was the first game of the season.
And my fiance's season tickets are in the upper deck. So we watch the first few minutes in the upper deck. We kind of wait for it to fill in, and then we're like, all right, we're going to move. So we move down.
Oh, look, there's 8,000 seats empty down there.
So many. So we move down. We're probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 rows up. Entirely empty row. It's 14 seats across, entirely empty. So Corey feels very strongly about the reseating and all that stuff. And he went and looked. He was like, 14 was the max you could buy. This row is 14. I bet someone owns this whole row. Mm. And then he went on SeatGeek while we were sitting there to see if they had listed any of them for sale. You know, because the idea, I think a lot of people would buy that many tickets and then just sell a bunch of them off every game. Mm. None of them were even listed. They didn't even try to sell them. Somebody just bought a whole row and didn't do anything with it. I thought it was crazy. And it's like, I get it. You know, Southern is not exactly lighting the world on fire or getting anybody super excited, but it's the first game of the year. I don't know. I go back and forth. I'm definitely not trying to blame the average fan. Some of these games that are at 6 o'clock, it's hard to get to them right after work. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like Razorback fans are bad and don't care, but I think they've set it up in such a way that it's hard. It's a harder draw for some people.
I mean, even if you can get an $8 ticket, you may still have to pay $30 for parking to go down there. And then, it's not like it used to be, and you know, maybe that's just nostalgia. I don't know, but it's not like it used to be where you buy these tickets and you know you're not going to go, and it's like, hey, you know, can you give me $15 for them? Mm-hmm. Can you give me $10 for them? I just want to get these off my hands. Mm-hmm. Now it's, hey, I've had to pay several thousand dollars to get this, and I'm going to put this on SeatGeek, and I'm going to mark it at $64 because that's the value of one game to my season ticket package or whatever the number is. That's changed things. The fact that the university partnered with SeatGeek and suddenly made it okay for like dynamic ticket prices to be what drives the price of the tickets, that has had a huge effect on it. You know, it's a lot of things, but yeah, it's certainly not. I think for people who are like me, who grew up, not even grew up, but just who became accustomed to college basketball game days looking a certain way, and whether that be the music, whether that be the way tickets are given away or exchanged, the whole thing now just feels like a foreign very foreign experience.
Yeah. And I don't even have, I don't have that nostalgia factor necessarily. I mean, I grew up around here, but I was never a bit, like as a kid, I wasn't a huge basketball fan. I was more into football and baseball. And so, you know, we would go, but it wasn't, I wasn't necessarily there and just riveted by the whole basketball experience when I was a kid. But honestly, even people my age, I just, I don't see a lot of them clamoring to go to basketball games. I don't see a lot of them super excited about the atmosphere. You know, it's,
that's,
I don't
why
think
the seating capacity is going to go down. Yeah.
I don't think it's just a, you know, old man yells at cloud, not calling you old, but you know,
you
what
can
I'm
do it. I get,
I don't think it's just that. I think there's more to it than that. I don't think it's just for people that remember a different experience. I think it's more, it's also people that could be new to it. You know, you think about how much this area is growing. You've got people moving in here from other places. They want a sport to go watch. They want a team to support. Are they coming? I don't know.
I will tell you this. A lot of people say, well, Northwest Arkansas's population is X. I got to tell you, get to know some of the people in Northwest Arkansas, they ain't Razorback fans.
No, that's true.
You got a ton of transient, you know, a very transient experience going on, I guess, you know, where, hey, I've even said this. I live in Fayetteville. I live 5 miles, if that, from campus. I walk around my neighborhood. I see an Iowa flag. I see a Florida State flag. I see a Nebraska flag. I see LSU. I see Oklahoma.
We have a Georgia in our neighborhood.
That's what it is up here. I mean, it's, yeah, you got a lot of Razorback fans. You got a lot of people who are coming in who they don't have that. And so, you know, it's just because Northwest Arkansas's got X number of people living there doesn't mean that X number of people are Razorback fans or X number of people have the financial means to be able to go fill up these places. And this is, and by the way, this happens in the NBA too. Go watch an NBA game that's not, you know, the game of the week. Ton of empty seats. How many people does Dallas have in it? Yeah, I mean, how many yeah. people live in Dallas? 8 million. Well, I mean, there's empty seats at American Airlines Center too. So this isn't just a Fayetteville, Arkansas thing. Looking around the SEC over the weekend, OU beat Alabama, and I cannot stress to you enough how much OU should not have won that football game. They shouldn't have won. And like, give them a lot of credit for winning. I'm not saying that, like, you know, they cheated or anything like that. It's just when you look at a team right now that's susceptible to getting upset relative to where people think they are, and OU right now, I mean, when the new playoff rankings come out tomorrow and we hear Hunter Yurecek announcing why, I think I may skip the basketball game just to see how he does on the playoff deal tomorrow. But OU, Christina, this is two games in a row where they've won a one-score game because they've had a defensive touchdown. They had a defensive touchdown against Tennessee, and that was the difference in that game. They had a defensive touchdown the other night against Alabama, and that was the difference in that game. OU has got a real offensive problem, and their defense, they're covering it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I think they are primed to get upset somewhere down the line. I mean, I guess they've only got two games. Missouri is a game this week that I think is really interesting. I think they're going to make it tough on Missouri because Missouri's got a third-string quarterback playing. But Missouri does have that running back who all you got to do apparently is just turn around to him and, you know, see the results. OU's got a great run defense. I guess what I'm saying is I don't expect a real deep playoff push by OU because the offense is just it's bad. But give them credit. Their defense is opportunistic. I thought it was interesting. They beat Alabama the other day. The way that Alabama has beaten a lot of people over the years, like during the Nick Saban years, which was you get a non-offensive touchdown, and that totally changes the complexion of the game. And honestly, that's how OU did for many years under Bob Stoops when Venables was his defensive coordinator. I mean, you know, I watched a ton of their games in the 2000 to 2004-05 range, and there were a bunch of them where it was a defensive play, a special teams play that totally turned that game around, and that's kind of what they've reverted to again.
Yeah, it's – I don't know. I had such low expectations for them. Not super low expectations for them coming into the year, but I thought they would be fine. I thought they'd be kind of middle of the league, sort of, you know. I just didn't expect this from them. And so just I think they kind of had a couple years there. There was not crazy, but some Brent Venables hot seat talk, you know, coming into this year. I might have said Brett. I definitely meant Brent.
We knew what you meant.
Brent Venables hot seat talk, but I think so this has been a little bit unexpected to me, and I feel like I'm just now starting to wrap my mind around Oklahoma, you know, and what they're bringing to the table. I think they suffered with John Mateer being injured. I think he's starting to kind of get back to form this year, but I think you're right. They do have some offensive issues, and I think the defense is really what's been helping them. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect a deep playoff run from them, but, I mean, they could make it interesting in whatever their first round game is.
Yeah, I can't believe they won this game. They were held to a 212 yards of offense.
Oh, really? I didn't even see the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were talking about Kane Womack last week and how good his defense. His defense was superb the other day. It's just OU forced three turnovers and Alabama didn't force one, and that was really the difference in the game. And one of the turnovers was like an 87 yard touchdown return. And then they got a big play in the special teams, too. Isaiah Satania gave him a big punt return that I think set up a field goal.
He's having a really good year for them.
He's having a good year. Yeah, he is having a good year. A&M beat South Carolina the other day. What a crazy game that was. This
Amazing.
Is 2 weeks in a row where there's been a championship contender, because Indiana did this with Penn State, too, that really gave you a championship effort down the stretch. They dug themselves a big hole, but they – you know, they made the plays that they needed to win it at the end. I was very impressed with A&M. I was as impressed that they came back as I was unimpressed that they found themselves down 30-3 to South Carolina.
Just a terrible first half. Like, just bafflingly bad. So it's amazing. You know, you talk about not letting go of the rope. For them to be able to come back and do it, that's amazing. That was a really fun game. I felt like this weekend there were a few, and not necessarily in the SEC, but it felt like there were just across college football a few kind of near upsets, like things that kind of made you raise your eyebrows and then pretty quickly made, oh, just
that's how November goes.
Yeah.
I mean, like Ole Miss and Florida, they found themselves down in the fourth quarter. Ole Miss ends up winning that game. Missouri had a running back run for 300 the other night against Mississippi State. Boy, they looked really good. Missouri did. I watched a little bit of that game.
I wasn't expecting that. I picked Mississippi State.
Missouri.
I just didn't think they would have anything to offer.
Georgia's figured it out. Like, their offense has been really good all year. Mm-hmm. Their defense has been sketchy, but now all of a sudden it's like they're finding some defense. They shut Texas down.
Yeah.
They're a team. I think they're the team. If you ask me right now who's a team that's just kind of – and it's weird to say this because I think Georgia was ranked number 5 in the playoff poll last week. But if you ask, like, who's a team that's just kind of off the radar, that's sitting there, like, they're lurking.
It's because they're not the Georgia that we usually – they're not the same Georgia we talk about usually. So it's I think that's maybe why people are overlooking them or not talking about them that much, because they're not the team that is just so much better. You know, they're not just steamrolling everyone the way that we've seen them do. Or the defense – while the defense has been – pretty good, you know, like you said, it's had some sketchy moments. It's not the dominant defense that we're used to seeing from Georgia, and I think that's maybe why it's
dominant
kind of,
the other day.
Yeah, I think that's kind of
Did
why
you hear Kirby's
it's
quote
radar.
His soundbite.
Which one?
He said something about
where it's like something
we're not
about
cashing,
a check
we're not just
and,
cashing
yeah, yeah,
checks
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Basically he said that this day and age teams, they don't want to be players don't want to be physical.
Yeah,
they just want the check. He said, we're not just getting checks around here. We're playing physical football.
And also getting checks.
they're getting plenty of checks. But they do play a very old school way of football. SEC standings now. You could have something really weird coming up in a couple of weeks. Like, what if A&M lost to Texas? Which I don't know that I think is going to happen, but that game is going to be in Austin. What if they lose to Texas? You got 4 1-loss SEC teams. Or even if A&M wins out, you could have 3 1-loss SEC teams, because now Alabama with that loss is in that – so some weird tiebreaker-type deals
Do
come into
place. Do we know
what
those tiebreakers are?
Beyond weird.
Head-to-head?
Just weird. That's just weird. Yeah. No, I mean, well, there's no way to do a head-to-head deal because not all of those four teams
you don't
played
all play,
each other.
Yeah.
So, like – something that happened the other day, because A&M beat South Carolina, it made it to where, regardless of what happened the rest of the day, they could not figure out what the SEC championship game was going to be until
I kinda remember that.
After the last game of the season. And this was a kind of an interesting note the other day. This was the first time since Halloween of 1992 that there were 3 SEC games that were decided by 2 points or less on the same day. How about that?
That's so strange.
Yeah. Yeah. You had the Arkansas game that was a 2-point game or a 1-point game.
Yeah.
You had OU and Alabama that was a 2-point game. Mm-hmm. And then
Texas A&M, South Carolina?
Yes. That was 1-point game. On Halloween 1992, Arkansas and Auburn tied 24-24. Florida beat Georgia by 2, 26-24. Mississippi State beat Kentucky by 1, 37-36. And South Carolina beat Tennessee by 1, 24-23.
All on the same day.
So you saw history on Saturday. And you saw history by Arkansas blocking a punt and taking it back for a touchdown. First time since Halloween of 09.
Pull from you, a good stat that you were Halloween
of 09.
You were able to find that pretty quickly. I guess they have it in the last time it happened in the game notes, right?
I'm pretty good with a set of game notes.
Those are helpful.
First time since 09, Seth Armbrust had one against Eastern Michigan. That was the game where Broderick Green ran for a 99-yard touchdown, just to kind of give you an idea of how long ago that was.
That's crazy.
That Arkansas had. It had been 200 games, Christina, since they had had a punt return blocked and taken back for a touchdown. I would be very interested to know, was that the longest such streak in the country?
That'd be hard to find, but maybe.
I mean, like, sometimes you get lucky and block a punt and take it back for, like, you're not even meaning to. But you go 16 years without doing that?
That's a long time.
That's crazy. That is crazy long amount of time that came to the end because of Wyatt Simmons' block the other day that was returned by Caleb Wooden. All right, tomorrow on our podcast, we'll talk basketball. We'll talk some more football. Hope to see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.